Can you say the letter C?
Kick this thing off. Let's go over real quick who makes the wheels go on the wagon here for the CC Hunt Files podcast. Grizzly Coolers, code WCB. Man, if you don't have coolers and you got hunts coming up, hurry up and snag them. I think they're back in stock with mostly everything right before hunting season kicks off. But like I said, don't take my word for it. Give them a call. Get whatever you need filled now before everything starts. I know I'll be using the crap out of mine here in less than 2 weeks. I head west, so mine will be in full swing, hopefully getting filled with lots of mule deer and elk backstraps, inners, hindquarters, fronts, everything. That's the plan, at least. We'll see. Black Ovis, WCB10, any last-minute gear, gosh dang, they've got basically everything. At this point, anything that you need and you need in a hurry, blackovis.com, there's the place to do it. Also, the sister over there, Camo Fire, make sure you're checking them out. They've got some crazy deals going on right now as we speak. Novix Tree Stands, shout-out to my guys over there in Peoria. Hanging hunt setups, lock-ons, sticks, pretty much whatever you need for the whitetail game. Or even if you're a guy, I got a buddy right now that's borrowing one of my hanging hunt setups. He's going to sit over some water on an early elk hunt. Perfect stand and stick combo, that Hilo with four sticks. He's going to pack it in, sit over some water. It's not the sexy way to kill elk, but it's a good way to kill elk. Last but not least, Hunter's Box Club. Shout out to my man Devin over there. We got some really cool stuff in the works with Devin. Got a really cool t-shirt design for September coming up. It's going to be CC Hunt File themed, so keep your eyes out on that. With that being said, man, this guy, he doesn't even need an introduction because he's pretty much larger than life in all aspects of life. They don't get much sexier, studlier, and smarter than the guy that I've got on today. And it's my pleasure to have on. Most of you are going to know him by his Instagram handle and not actually his name, but none other than Big Chief Whack-a-Buck, or I guess if you're in a very tight circle and you call him by his first name, Henry Ferguson. My man.
That's me.
That's you, brother.
How's it going,
you.
Clint?
Hey, it is going well. It's going to be going a lot better here in a little bit because I got you on specifically for a couple hot topics right now.
Okay.
First, we're going to talk about antelope because you love antelope. You love to hunt antelope. You just got done having a fantastic day yesterday. I know this for a fact. Hunting antelope on, I believe, maybe it was the season opener yesterday for you?
It was, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was out, got up at 3 o'clock to get in place up on the place I hunt there. And, man, I'll tell you. Antelope hunting with a bow is the dumbest thing anybody's ever tried. It's totally irresponsible. It just doesn't make any sense. And I can't get enough of it. I mean, it is literally one of the most frustrating endeavors you could ever take on. My method of hunting them, I'm not sitting a ground blind. I'm not sitting over water. I'm out there hunting them, and I'm trying to sneak in on them and, spot and stalk archery antelope in a place that is largely wide open. And I mean wide open. And it's a lot of fun. It takes some discipline to sit there and look at it and go, okay, I see that buck,
right?
But I can't stalk that buck.
Exactly.
He's in a place where I cannot get to him. And that usually kicks in about day 3 or 4 for me. Yesterday was, hey, I see a buck, I'm going to go after a buck.
Right.
And when I first got out there in the morning, I ran into one that was just kind of feeding his way up a ridge. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, I can get on the backside of that little ridge.
Oh, yeah.
And I use the term ridge pretty loosely because this was a rolling hill. But I thought, man, I can get around him, and I just might have a shot at this.
Yep.
And I got about 200 yards away from him, and the wind swirled, and off he went. I'm like, okay, no problem. On to the next. I mean, the sun was, I don't know if the sun was even up yet by the time I'd blown that one out. So immediately I glassed down this big long valley, and I see some bucks feeding way off in the distance. I mean, way off, probably a mile and a half out at least. And so I watched them, and the biggest buck bedded down right next to this draw.
Oh, perfect.
And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Money spot.
Stuff like this. Yeah, stuff like this just doesn't happen, you know? So I went running down there, man. And I mean, I was covering some ground pretty quick, because these antelope don't bed for long.
No, oh gosh, no.
And yeah, so I went flying down there. And as I got a little closer, I took another peek up, and he was bedded away from the rest of the herd.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, this is like dream stuff here. So anyway, I got down in that wash, cut the distance as much as I could. And as soon as I started kind of slowly coming up out of the wash, he spotted me. And I mean, I'm coming up slowly out of the wash,
right,
just trying to identify where he is. And we saw each other, I think, about the same time. I'm trying to get a distance, I'm trying to range a distance on the brush that he's bedded in.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've got like 66, 70, and it just so happened I had my sight set at 70 already. And I'm like, you know what, not a problem. I'm just going to put 70 on his heart. And if I'm a little high,
yep,
that's not a problem.
Yep.
And so he stands up, and just as I am barely starting to put tension on the string, he's gone. So that was as close as I got to getting a shot yesterday, but it was awesome. I mean, hey, hunting antelope's fun because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's a, you
a lot
know,
of
there's,
opportunity.
There's yeah, it's a high opportunity, low percentage sort
right.
of deal. But I guess it's good. It's an effective teacher.
Oh yeah.
Because you do realize, or you should realize at some point, that not all of them are stockable.
Right.
And you get a little bit more selective, and then your odds start going up quite a bit. But
no, absolutely. Well, I had to get that out of the way right off the rip, because I knew you were going to have a good take on the antelope thing. It is kind of an idiotic thing we all love to do, it seems like.
It truly is.
With a bow and arrow. I've been lucky. I've been on two antelope hunts, 5 or 6 days to kill one and 7 or 8 to kill another one, but two in Montana, two really good goats with my bow, and I mean, I love it. I would do it every year if those godforsaken floppy-eared mule deer didn't get in my road that I've fallen in love with, and that has pretty much replaced my whitetails now is the mule deer. And before we dive into that, because that was my second reason why I had to have you on, Henry, is for those that don't know you, which a lot of people will, but for those that don't, give us a quick rundown. Okay, you're Henry, but you're not. You're actually Big Chief Whack-a-Buck. Now we need to know. People want to know how did we get that name? Because I love it. I mean, from day one, I'm like,
well,
man, that's the name. So give us a rundown on the Instagram name. Give us a little bit about you. Pretend nobody knows you. Give us a rundown, and then we are going to dive hardcore into picking your brain on mule deer and your philosophies, and I can't wait to get into that. But give everybody a little taste of what you've got to offer as far as a day in the life of Henry.
Sure. Well, so my name, again, Henry Ferguson. I've been Big Chief Whack-a-Buck is, I couldn't even really tell you the genesis of the name, other than a stupid joke that just kind of stuck.
I love it, man.
And it went from being an inside joke to, being my handle on Instagram. But I'm 116th Cherokee, so it's all legit.
There
don't
it is.
It
really is legit. This all makes sense now.
Yeah, so don't be sending anybody to the house, upset about it. It's purely in jest, as with most of the things I do. So, but yeah, I've been bow hunting out here for a long time. I've been shooting a bow for a really long time, and really actively bow hunting for I guess 20 plus years now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I live in Colorado, 48 years old for a couple more weeks, which probably makes me the oldest guy you've ever had on your podcast, and that's okay.
Man, I don't think so.
The fact that you have to think about it kind of hurts my feelings a little bit. I
think so, you're second.
Second, there we go. Well, I'll take it. So I'm heavily involved in bow hunting out here. I mean, to the extent that I've been on the board of directors for the Colorado Bow Hunters Association for about 5 years. Served in all kinds of various capacities there, and currently I am the chairman of the Colorado Bow Hunters Association. So, and all that that entails, which is a moving target, because it seems like it's more every day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You guys deal with a lot out there in the great state of Colorado when it comes to fighting the good fight. That's for sure.
Yeah. We've had a couple of busy years. This one's been kind of crazy, but truthfully, we've accomplished a lot of really good things.
Yep.
And it makes it worth it. You know, I mean, we put in a lot of work, but we're seeing some really substantial rewards coming off of it that'll benefit bow hunters for years to come. So yeah, that's what we do.
That's awesome. Yeah, so, that's an honor for you, and I know you look at it that way as far as for being on that, and that just that speaks volumes for what fellow bow hunters in the state think of you. And I know I sure do think a lot of you, Henry, and the stuff you do, and you know what all you do for the next generation. And in fact, actually, I mean, you're a big stud, but an even bigger stud would be little Big Chief Whack-a-Buck. I mean, he's pretty much kind of he's kind of taken over in the Ferguson household. I mean, that kid pretty much just kind of picks up any weapon and goes out and gets it done. I feel like a slingshot blindfolded, he'd go kill a zebra or something. I mean,
something's going down.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much an animal. I mean, it's like any time he goes out, it's just something big will fall. I mean, I don't know how he does it.
Well, and I appreciate you leaving my wife out of the discussion, because she's got a success rate on filling tags that I can't even imagine. But
she asked me to leave her out of this. She didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, you know, you or Kyle. She said, just let them have the spotlight. I don't need to have this one. You can have me on my own at some point. She said, I just let me out of this. But yes, for everyone wondering, that's not a joke. She is definitely a killer and definitely knows how to punch tags without a doubt.
And she's had a couple of them that she hasn't punched over the last couple of years, because she's been, you know, deferring for Kyle, you know, trying to get him the opportunities and stuff. So see, the way I've laid out and structured my hunting seasons, some would look at this and say, man, that's genius. Others look at it and they're going to say, that's very, very selfish. And I'll let you be the judge. But so what I do is basically I bow hunt. My family rifle hunts and muzzleloader hunts to some extent. But what this allows me to do is I can get out there and be totally irresponsible and take every opportunity I see during archery season.
Right.
And then it allows me to be way more focused when it comes time for rifle season.
So, right.
So when it's their time to hunt, it's their time to hunt. I don't have other tags pulling on me or anything. I am 100% in it for their hunts. And so, I mean, we scout like crazy, and that's been a huge part, huge reason for any success I've ever had.
Right.
Is I just scout a lot.
Yep.
And, you know, that's really wanting to know where the bucks are, which bucks are out there, which bucks I'm focused on, and how best to go about putting one of those things in the freezer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important, you know, on any hunt, if you've got the time to put in to scout prior to, especially these Western bow hunts. Sometimes I have time, sometimes I don't, but man, I always feel a lot better and way more prepared when I've got a few days to look at stuff in person, on foot, than just going into a hunt. And sometimes that's just how it works out for me traveling from Ohio out there. Sometimes I just have to rely upon e-scouting, but You love to glass. You love to film. I mean, you know, I've always gotten a great kick out of the videos and the pics. You know, you sure do love to be behind the glass pretty much any time of the year. And I think that goes without saying.
I do.
You know, and going into your philosophy on mule deer, that glassing is a huge key to your success, because you are very much different than, so like, you know, previous guests here, Brian Barney, who's a good buddy of yours, and Aaron Snyder, and, you know, Tony Treach, myself, we all kind of have the put everything on your back, go in, you know, 10 mile, 12 mile, 8 mile, whatever. I mean, not that we're opposed to not truck hunting or whatever, but a lot of us go in and hunt off our back. And, hey, that works out great. I personally love to hunt like that, you know, whatever. You have a much different philosophy. And by no means is just a disclaimer, there's no right, wrong. But you are a much different method to madness mule deer guy. And I want to talk about that, Henry, because, you know, your philosophies and what you're doing is polar opposite on some of the tactics and things that I'm doing. But both can be extremely and are extremely successful. And I mean, you're proof in the pudding. You know, you've got kind of your, I guess you could say, style down pat to where I pretty much sit back every year. And it's not a matter of when you're going to send me a photo and I get a phone call. It's just a matter, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when I'm going to get the text from you with, you're behind a big buck. And you, most years, that's usually what happens. You know, the last couple of years, we've got to be pretty good buddies. And I'm not surprised when the text comes in, here's the picture, here's a big buck, and here's Henry behind it. I mean, you definitely have a rhyme for your reason. So I want you to break that down for everybody, kind of your philosophy, why you hunt the way you hunt, what brought you to your style, and just kind of the pros and cons of it. I think it's definitely very beneficial to people to kind of hear your take on certain things, because a lot of people, I think, have the stigma that you got to be a mountain goat, you got to be in the gym, you can't drink pop, you can't eat chips, you got to pretty much be this, you know, Cam Haines type dude to go hunt mule deer, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, you know, it's like the old term, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yep, absolutely.
And I mean, hey, what you guys are doing is highly effective.
Yep.
And if I didn't just have such a deep love for pizza and cheeseburgers and Pepsi, I'd probably be out there with you. But
Pepsi, man, Pepsi should be sponsoring you. I don't care what anyone says. I mean, I don't know anybody that is a Pepsi guy. More than you.
And I'll be honest, I'm a little offended that they aren't. you know, I've not been somebody who really like seeks out sponsorships, but how many times does a brother have to hashtag Pepsi before they say, hey, maybe we should chip that guy off a phone call, see if we can maybe work together.
But gosh.
No, the funny thing is, I've hunted like that.
Yep.
I've had some success in hunts like that, but I tend to find good deer in places that people overlook.
Yep.
And that's kind of my method, is by finding some place that's not super obvious. Maybe it isn't beautiful, but in my opinion, as soon as a big old set of velvet antlers stands up, either like out of sagebrush or whatever, the place becomes beautiful instantly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, for me, I truck camp. In fact, last year we bought a trailer, and last year was probably the most enjoyable, pleasant hunting experience I've ever had in my life. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But, you know, the fact is, again, I talked about scouting, and I think if you're going to hunt the way I hunt, having a little bit of firsthand knowledge of an area is massively beneficial.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Because, you know, I'm not going into a season unprepared, but I'm typically not going into a season unprepared. Now, this year, I just told you before we started recording, I didn't get a deer tag until Wednesday.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I got one Wednesday morning in the reissue list. And I mean, you talk about a frustrating experience. I mean, it was, you know, it was very frustrating. I didn't get drawn. Right. You know, our landowner tag connection seems to be drying up, and so it's been pretty frustrating. But having said that, you know, there's always options. There's always things out there, and I just stayed vigilant. A tag popped up, and I snagged it last Wednesday.
That's awesome. So,
in addition to, you know, being extremely busy with all my, you know, CBA responsibilities this year, I just haven't had a ton of time to go out scouting because, and I haven't made the time because I didn't have a tag. Now, I was pretty confident I'd get one, but I didn't have any idea what area, if it would be in my preferred area or if I'd just end up taking whatever tag I could get my grubby little hands on. And don't get me wrong, I was several days away from taking whatever I could get my hands on, just because it's not easy right now. And, you know, one of the things I mentioned to you is, you know, hey, here we are. We've got a population of nearly 6 million in the state of Colorado, people that is, not deer. And, you know, as a result, there's just more and more people every day out there trying to get tags. And it's just hard. It's just hard to do. So one of the things that I was really focused on, you know, again, is I'm always out there scouting, doing a lot of scouting leading up to the season. Well, this year, I just haven't gotten that, haven't had that time and haven't made that time. So now I find myself with an archery, with my archery deer tag, which is my number one objective. And I've got this archery antelope tag. And I'll be honest, I am struggling to come up with the motivation and the ability to make the decision of this weekend, should I be out antelope hunting or this weekend should I be out trying to locate the deer in my dreams?
Right.
So, you know, it's just a priority thing more than anything, but yeah. So that's the kind of stuff I struggle with though.
I mean, that's a good problem to have. It really is. It's a good problem to have. I mean, it could be worse. Well, it could be worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right.
Now, Henry, before I forget, because this is, I want to ask you this question before we dive deeper into the rabbit hole here with you. But so in your opinion, okay, so you are looking, you know, more of that few miles in. That's kind of your wheelhouse. It's not the 5, 6, 7 miles deep. You're more maybe a few miles max, glass from the road, maybe hiking a little bit.
Just for the record, I do very little glassing from the road. Very little glassing from the road.
Okay.
I can't paint. It seems like a contradictory picture here of loving cheeseburgers and, you know, hiking a lot, but trust me, I don't get cheated on my hikes that I do throughout the season. I mean, at the end of the year, it's not uncommon for me to have logged 200 miles throughout a season, looking for deer, trying to find that deer, or, you know, just staying on it. But it's kind of one of those things that, you know, so I'm glassing deer a lot, and I'm glassing them from every location I can. I've got a lot of different vantage points that I use, and I mean, they'll vary from year to year depending on where I'm seeing the deer. I'm look, you know, and where I'm not seeing deer, because sometimes they just change on you.
Oh yeah,
they just do.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that's kind of the method though. You know, I get out there, I put a lot of miles in and a lot of effort looking for them. But, once I find them, you know, it's just a matter of staying on them and staying vigilant and ready to make something happen when the time comes.
Yeah. I guess a better way to phrase that for me on my end would have been you're not leaving the general area of where your truck or whatever you brought in is. You're not going in 5, 6, 7, 8 miles at a time and then back out 5, 6, 7, 8 miles. You know, you've got shorter hikes to vantage points and back. it allows you to cover a lot of ground and allows you to cover, you know, a ton of territory. If you're working a unit that's brand new, you know, you're doing in, out, in, out, in, out. You're able to cover a lot of country. And I'm guessing when you started hunting this way, that was kind of the method to the madness, or that was kind of like the philosophy behind it, I guess, is where did you see the major pros versus the cons to this style of hunting for you versus, say, like how I would go hunt muleys in the high country, or maybe how like Brian Barney would go, you know, like what kind of stuck out to you? Like, okay, this works great for me, or this works great for someone who's like me. Why? Like what's kind of, I guess what's the Henry pros to this versus the cons that's really kept you kind of, this is like your wheelhouse. This is kind of where you stay. You know, this is kind of your preferred method and you've really perfected it. Why did you kind of fall in love with this, and what was kind of the, I guess, determining factors in, you know what, this is kind of the style that was built for Big Chief Whack-a-Buck here. This is it.
Well, for one thing, I thought for sure I was going to be a hardcore backpack guy.
Really?
I did. I bought no all shit. The gear. Oh, I have all the gear. Oh, yeah.
I never knew that.
And I've tried it.
Yep.
So the funny thing is, it's a little contradictory saying this, but I can be more mobile where, I mean, I can hunt one side of a mountain range one day. I can hunt the other side of the mountain range the next day.
Yep.
They're still in the same unit.
Yep.
Where if you hike in 8 miles and you're locked in to a few basins there, or it requires a pretty significant expenditure of rather energy, or of both energy and time, to do a big relocation.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm trying to avoid. I'm trying to stay more mobile, because there's mornings where I get out there and if I see a buck that I'm looking for, great, from my first glassing point. If I don't see that buck from that spot, I'm going to hang out there for an hour or so. I'm going to make sure I've seen and done a good inventory of everything that I can see from there. And then I'm gonna move on, man. I'm gonna be moving on to the next glassing point, trying to find the spot where I can see him. And so, I mean, sometimes that's depending on the spot. Sometimes it's, you know, hiking farther down the ridge. Sometimes it's, you know, hauling butt back to the truck and doing a complete relocation.
Right.
So, but you know, there's only so many hours in the morning and evening where glassing is truly effective. So you just got to be, you've got to be ready, and you've got to be willing to move and adjust your sights, so to speak, as needed.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of guys, they truly get scared away from bow hunting mule deer, especially early season velvet bucks, because, you know, let's be honest, the cool or the sexy way to hunt them, especially in today's world, is I'm going to pack in 12 miles, I'm going to live off my back, I'm gonna, and don't get me wrong, I mean I'm one of those guys, I love to do that, but there's a big difference between being physically and mentally able to do that and enjoying yourself, and then basically doing it, hating your life, ready to jump off a cliff because it's just not meant for you, but you're trying to force it to be, you know, the way that you hunt because it's sexy. So I think there's a fine line between, okay, I'm going to look in the mirror and is this really how I should hunt or not? And if not, it's not the do all say all. I think a lot of people are scared to try mule deer hunting because they think there's only one method to do it. And there's not, you know, my method and yours is completely polar opposite, but both equally effective. And depending on how you want to go about your hunt, I love my style, but I've also ran your style. A lot of what you do, being very, very mobile and utilizing like an ATV or a truck or whatever to kind of bounce around a lot, I do that in the rut, chasing bucks, mule deer. I love to be as mobile as I possibly can be. Hike in a mile or two, go to a vantage, sit the vantage, nothing. Okay, back to the truck, to the next vantage I go, you know, and I love to do that in the rut. I think it's highly effective. And I mean, you're basically doing that in early season, and proof's in the pudding, it's highly effective too, but it's a different type of mule deer hunt and someone who maybe physically or mentally is just not able to go do a solo 9-day backpack hunt or whatever, I feel like a lot of those people think, well, yeah, that doesn't sound fun to me. I wouldn't be able to do that. I wouldn't want to do that. Ah, screw mule deer. And that couldn't be further from the truth because, you know, look at your style. I mean, your style is not based around 9 days in the backcountry living off of granola bars and a Mountain House meal and mentally, physically killing yourself every single day, mile. It's just, you know, it's just not that way. And it's a totally different style and a totally different mindset and a totally different type of hunt that's built for certain people. And I don't think you hear about it enough. Cause like I said, it's your preferred method. Although you are extremely sexy, your preferred method isn't the sexy way to hunt mule deer currently.
No, it's not. It's not. And honestly, that's why it doesn't get much notoriety.
Yep.
And that's fine. But the vast majority of the mule deer killed in the West are killed in hunting way more like I do than like you do.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that's something 100%. That, you know, you can lose sight of that real quick looking on social media right now.
Oh, yeah.
You just aren't going to see that.
Yep.
And that's, you know, like I said, that's fine. I mean, hey, everybody's got their own method, whatever works for them. But boy, that's, people are losing sight of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, glassing is a gigantic portion, and we've covered this a little bit. It's a gigantic portion to why you're successful. Okay. Give us a rundown. Glassing. Give us an A to Z on, take us to glassing school. What's important? What's your setup look like? Do you have a left or right, right, left, top, up, top, down? Do you grid? How do you go about glassing? What have you found is super effective for, let's just stick with mule deer. What's your preferred method? How do you kind of break down, okay, you're going to find this vantage point. It's going to unlock a bunch of country or hopefully unlock a bunch of country. You're going to get there before daylight. You're getting set up. What's your preferred glassing method? You running binos some, then the spotter, just the spotter. Just give us a breakdown because this is extremely important to anybody that wants to hunt mule deer, especially important to someone like you who's bouncing around a lot, trying to cover as much country as you can with your eyes versus doing a ton of hiking in 5 miles, 6 miles. You know, you're covering more country with your eyes than you are your legs, 10-1. And that's effective, but you've got to do it in a way where you're not burning your eyeballs out. And I'm sure you've got a preferred way you like to set up and glass and kind of how you go about it. So let's dive into that, Henry. I'd love to hear kind of, like I said, your glassing school from A to Z.
Well, sure. So first thing, the most important thing is to find somewhere where you have a good field of view.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two is to be there when the animals are most active. So that's typically going to be early and late. And in my experience, it's mostly early.
Yep.
Because, you know, being a bow hunter, man, if I was shooting them with a rifle, it'd be totally different because you could see something in the evening a mile away. Well, I mean, it's going to take me a long time to cover that mile and then cover that final distance, more importantly, you know, quietly on a bow hunt where, you know, with a rifle, if you see something a mile away, let's face it, you only need to get to within a few hundred yards of them.
Right.
Then you can take care of it. So that's why I'm way more effective on that on morning hunts for the most part. So you need to be there at first light. And preferably before first light, so you can get everything set up. And when I say everything set up, what I'm talking about for me in my case, this year I made actually a pretty big change to my glassing setup.
Oh, really?
I've been using. Oh, yeah, yeah. This is going to be a very interesting year for me. I got some loophole stuff this year, and I've got the 12 by 50.
Nice. We like to hear that. Big supporter of Working Class Bowhunter and the CC Hunt Files. I love to see it. Love to see it, Henry. That's good. I didn't know that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm giving them a shot this year.
I think you'll be very happy.
In the past, what I've done, I carried 8x30 Swarovskis.
Yep.
I had the old SLCs.
Yep.
I have a pair of 8 or I had a pair of 18 by 56 Maven B6s, and then I had a big 85 millimeter spotting scope.
Yep.
So I looked at it and decided that I could eliminate 3 pounds out of my pack, which I would much rather eliminate 3 pounds out of my pack than losing 3 pounds out of my diet. So I took the lazy man's way out, and instead of having a pair of eights,
that's a good way to look at it, Henry. That's a good way to look at it.
Look, man, it's just common sense. And I mean,
2 + 2 = 4, right?
That's right.
Common sense, brother.
So anyway, instead of having the 8s, the 18s, and that big, heavy Nikon EDG spotter,
yep,
which weighs about a metric ton, by the way.
Yeah.
But the glass is so good. So anyway, I switched, and I now have the 12x50 BX5 Santiums.
Yep. Santiums, that's what I run. Love them.
And then I also have the 80 millimeter spotter, the Santium also.
Yep. Same as me. So we are running the exact same setup, Henry.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I told him, I said, just send me what Clint uses and I'll be fine.
Oh, so, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. So what I did, one of the most important things you can get for your binoculars, though, You need a tripod.
Oh yeah,
and you need a tripod mount. So I use a tripod mount. I've got a stud on the front of it. I can quick put that in there. It's always on, and then I just put that plate on, and it's ready to go. So that's the most important thing, and the reason that's so important is because when you're looking through your binoculars to hand hold those binoculars, let's face it, they're 12s. You're going to get some movement in there.
Oh yeah.
When they are stationary or you are slowly panning, you are infinitely more likely to pick up on deer. And whether that's a matter of picking up on movement, picking up on any number of different things, but you need to have that thing stationary. So, I mean, when I have sat there with my eights on a tripod and spotted deer, spotted antlers sticking up a mile away. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're focused and you're really dialed in on what you're looking for, it's amazing how effective you can be.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm not going to leave that glassing point unless I see the deer I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just not going to do it. I mean, I'm focused. I know what I'm looking for. And so by the time the season rolls around, if I'm hunting one of the units that I've scouted heavily, I know the bucks I'm looking for.
Yep.
And that's what I'm going to stay focused on. However, like last year, I was out in Utah and I just want to hunt bucks.
Right.
So I'm sitting down and I'm seeing bucks. I'm making notes of where they are. And then once I find the buck in the binoculars, I'll switch over to the spotter and get a little better look at them. And that, you know, in the spotter, I'm looking at trying to do a, you know, kind of a rough score in my head on it. And not that score means everything, but it gives you a benchmark for, hey, is that a buck I should be going after, or just let him go and find, you know, keep looking for his dad, so to speak. And but as far as methods on glassing, the first thing I do when I sit down is I'm going to take a quick visual of the area that I intend to glass, both close and far, looking for obvious things that are sticking out, whether it's a deer that I can literally see, a white butt, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. But I want to make sure I'm not overlooking something right off the bat, because I've had so many times where I've literally walked up to my glassing point, if it's daylight, and I look right off there, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's deer right there. There's deer over there. There's deer over here. And so first thing you want to do is make sure you're not overlooking something by making it harder than it needs to be. Second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take a real quick pass with binoculars just handheld. Again, just to do kind of a quick, hey, is there anything a little bit less obvious that I couldn't see with my naked eye, but I can now see with a handheld binocular. And then the third thing I'm going to do is I'm going to sit my butt down. I'm going to get real comfortable behind that tripod, and I'm going to be glassing and looking for bucks. And so now at this point in glassing, you've got to keep in mind, again, we're talking early morning here.
Yep.
So these bucks should be up feeding, but there's always those vampire bucks that are literally just afraid of the sun. And so, you know, those are the bucks I'm looking for with those first two methods, with the naked eye and then the quick, you know, the quick pass. Then after that, you start looking a little bit finer details and just kind of breaking the system down, you know. I mean, I don't glass with my spotting scope. The funny thing is my buddy Tim does, and he loves it. He's super effective doing that. I don't get it. I'm not effective at all glassing through one eye in a small field of view. That's just not something that works real well for me. I want a pretty big field of view so I can get as much terrain in the eyes there as I possibly can.
I'm with you there.
So
I'd much rather look through those 12s on a tripod nice and steady and pan, 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 pan. And then once I find something, then I hurry up, flip over to the spotter and zoom in. Oh, that's a good one. Or, oh, it's not. And then back to the binos, pan, pan, pan. So, yeah, you and I are very similar on that.
And even once they're on, I go through a couple different stages also once they're tripod mounted. The first thing I'm doing is, you know, I'm doing a pretty quick scan. And then I'm going to start looking a lot finer, looking at, you know, and again, this is all still early morning. This can happen in an hour. It can happen in 3 hours, depending on how big a country you're looking at, and what kind of terrain you're looking at as well. But really I'm looking at, you know, if I don't see something in that first pass, I'm going to start looking a lot closer, and I'm going to start looking at shady areas. I'm going to start looking out this, you know, really focusing and keying in on, you know, like bedding areas to see if something's bedded early. You know, and now I'm looking for parts of animals. I'm not looking for the whole animal so much. I'm looking for, I tend to be looking for parts of animals at that point. You know, I'm looking for an antler tip in the trees, or I'm looking for a white butt, or that back white of a front leg or a back leg on a deer.
Yep.
It's so funny. Those are something that people overlook all the time. And it's one of the things that I really, really try to key in on, is looking for. Or, you know, it could be just a body line. You're looking in an area where you've got all these vertical trees. You're looking for a horizontal body line.
Right.
And, you know, which is like the back line of a deer. So, yeah, you're just looking for things. And then once things go beyond that, you know, say we're getting into midday, and we maybe changed locations. Now I am looking for bedded deer. I'm looking in shady spots. I'm looking at overhangs. I'm looking at, you know, under trees, whatever it happens to be. Or in brush lines. I'm looking for bedded deer. And the funny thing is, we used to just blow off the mid part of the day, and we'd just go back to camp, or, you know, we'd go to the nearest town and, you know, grab a burger or whatever. But I've just found out that, man, it is so stinking effective being out there midday. And those bucks, they tend to be in a bed pretty long by midday. I mean, everybody knows, you know, there's that whole morning bed and then afternoon, that, you know, later afternoon bed, and they tend to stay in that second bed longer. But the funny thing is, I kill a lot of deer out of those first beds. And I know that's not a super popular strategy,
but right.
I hunt wide open country where the shade is fleeting. So I don't know where that second bed's going to be, but if they're bedded in a good spot that first time, man, I'm going. If I think I can make it there before they move off, before he moves off, I'm on the way.
So you're very aggressive on that first bed then. That'd be a good way to describe it.
I tend to be.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
If they're bedded in a spot, and you can look at it and figure out, hey, are they going to be in shade for 2 hours? Is 2 hours going to be enough for me to get over there? If the answer is yes, see ya. I'm out. Nope. I'm going for it.
I can see where that'd be very effective because, I mean, with mule deer, like you said, you don't know how long, when, if, where. I mean, so I've always said, hey, the first good opportunity, if I feel like it's a good opportunity, you got to go and you got to treat it like it's the last stock of your life because it might be the one and only opportunity that you get on a hunt. And I've had lots of those where, gosh, looking back, if I wouldn't have went on that stock, I wouldn't have got an opportunity on the whole hunt out of 8-9 days. You know, sometimes you only get one good opportunity, and it's like, well, if that's your good opportunity, first bed, you got enough time, hey, send it. It's time to go.
Well, and you made a great point there, maybe even unintentionally, you know, going after like it's the last stock you're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion, every single stock, you need to put everything into every stock.
Absolutely.
And, you know, treat this like it is the best opportunity you're going to get all season. And because I'll tell you what, I've had a few of them that I've gone at them a little lackadaisical, and those stocks invariably do not work out for me.
Right.
Yep. They just don't, you know. But you know, for somebody who's coming out maybe from the Midwest who's got a lot of tree stand experience, here's what I'd recommend. Come out, say, two or three days before the hunt.
Yep.
Okay? Fine. Sit down. Use your glassing. You know, this is how you learn these glassing techniques, is by glassing. I mean, it's not something you can read in a book, not something you can really, you can learn it by listening on a podcast, but you really, the only way you can do it is by sitting your butt down and looking at a lot of country.
Yep, absolutely.
Because you're going, the more you do it, the better you're going to get at picking up those little subtle things that, oh man, there's an animal out there. So what I try to do, and this is something I'd recommend to everybody who is not really spot stock hunted, get your butt out here a couple days early before the season and spend those first couple days getting to know your glass, getting to better understand the terrain and where, what features they're looking for, where you're going to find those bedded animals. And then, and this is my favorite part, get to work.
Yep.
Get out there and start stalking. And what I recommend is find the first group of does you can, watch them feed until they bed. And I can't stress that enough. Watch them until they bed. Don't try to stalk them while they're feeding, because it's in my experience, that is you're just hoping to get lucky. So you're kind of stacking the odds in your favor if you're waiting for them to bed. So wait for them to bed, get out there, stalk a couple groups of does, learn lessons from it. Okay, hey man, boy, that girl blew out when I was 200 yards away. That's not going to do for an archer. I got to get closer. How did she spot? Did she see me? Did she smell me? Did she hear me? That's it. Those are your three options, except that dreaded sixth sense, which none of us can explain or really even understand. But, you know, it's just get out there and learn from it. Get out there and start stalking and just learn those lessons. Because, I mean, I would much rather learn the lesson on a doe or a forky that didn't matter to me than going out there and learning it the hard way on a 180-inch buck that you may never see again because you blew it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a good point. And, you know, that's something I was going to ask you. Where do you think guys really foul up mule deer hunting with a bow? I mean, do you think it's a lot of guys that I've asked this question to, it's always on the stock, rushing the stock, or not taking the first good opportunity to stock, or not taking the first good shot opportunity, stalking to failure. Brian Barney talks about that a lot, and I agree. I used to be very guilty of that in my first few years of bow hunting Colorado. I would stalk to failure. Looking back, I really don't know what the hell I was thinking, but it just made sense. Oh, get another 10, get another 10, get another 10, even though I could have shot him 40 yards back. You know, but where do you feel like guys, you know, in your opinion, kind of go wrong with mule deer as far as bow hunting them? Typically, you know, early on in the season, that's kind of a lot of guys want to hunt velvet bucks and hunt early on. And that's kind of, you know, there again, kind of the sexy time to hunt them. And I mean, hey, it's probably my favorite. I love to hunt high country bucks in velvet and hunt them early and whatnot, but where do you think a lot of guys tend to kind of bite the bullet, per se, in a bad way when it comes to mule deer specifically?
I think the biggest lesson I've learned about stalking mule deer is literally, and we talked about this with antelope, and I'm way more selective on it with mule deer. I'm not going to stalk that deer if I don't see a path between me and the deer to get there quietly, out of sight, and with the wind in my face. And so, I mean, those are the things that you've just got to be. I think people are not nearly as analytical as they need to be or should be.
Yep.
When it comes to trying to determine which stocks you should go on and which stocks are just a very, very low odds proposition.
Yep.
So I had a buck that I hunted in 2010 that I called him Albert because I was convinced this buck was as smart as Albert Einstein. And in hindsight, I look back at this hunt often and, oh my gosh, it's one of those things where, you know, if I knew then what I know now, well, truly, if I knew then what I know now, that buck, all 201 inches of him would be hanging on my wall and I'd be the happiest guy in the world. But I simply didn't have enough of a knowledge base to kill that deer. And I openly and honestly admit that I didn't deserve that deer. I don't get me wrong, still would have loved to have been the one who took him. But
oh yeah,
I didn't know how to kill that deer. Every time I saw him, I stalked him, and I blew stalks in many creative ways, where I'm sure that deer ran off and thought, "What the hell was he thinking? Did he really think I was going to be there still? Come on, you know." But the fact is, I didn't know any better. I truly didn't know any better. I'm pretty much a self-taught hunter. I mean, I learned most of this stuff on my own, and I learned a lot of it through reading internet forums and articles and books and it's, you know, and making a lot of mistakes. That's how I've learned most of my lessons, is just simply making a lot of mistakes. So just be selective in the stocks that you take on, and when you are, you're going to be more successful.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You know, it's funny you brought up the buck Albert. You know, I think back to a couple of my, probably like my first 2 years in Colorado, because I hunted Colorado 4 years till I finally killed a good one. And the first 2 years...
Clint, real quick. I'm so glad you said that. Dude, I have a stack of unpunched tags.
Oh, yeah.
From when I was trying to learn how to do this.
Yep.
And a lot of people come out here and they just expect success. Well, I've listened to all the podcasts.
Yeah.
I've read all the books. I've shot my bow.
Yep.
I mean, my gosh, I've got all the latest gear. Yep. I deserve this deer. Well, no, it's not like that. These require a lot of effort.
Absolutely.
And for most of us, it takes a lot of practice to hone that craft, to really figure out how to do it. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
first 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it took me 4 years to get it figured out. And, you know, I made a couple solo trips to and from Colorado, very disheartened and very disappointed. But every year I kind of build on something. Okay, I go back to my first and second year, and I've hunted pretty much a different unit in Colorado every year. I don't think I've actually ever hunted the same unit. So I've hunted 8 or 10 different units now in Colorado, and year one and year two, I hunted two units close by each other, and got them on second draw, so I was still building points. So, you know, tough units to start with, not a ton of unpressured deer. You know, you're dealing with a lot of people, a lot of hikers, a lot of tags allotted, and these bucks are living up in the rocks and the cliffs way above timberline. I'm not a mountaineer. I'm not a rope and pulley and rappel guy. I'm not a rock climber.
That makes two of us.
Well, in order to kill these bucks, that's what a guy needed to do. And I had no idea. I can remember calling Brian Varney on the hunt and being like, this is probably a dumb question, but how in the hell do you and Dan navigate the rocks? Because they kill a lot of deer up in that nasty, cliffy shit. Well, these bucks moved up there because of all the pressure. And that's where they were staying and living, and they'd come down to feed and drink and go right back up. And now, knowing what I know, how to navigate it, how to glass it, how to effectively hunt it, I could have very easily killed one of those bucks because their patterns were there. They were doing the same thing. I just didn't have the knowledge to navigate that country and terrain and to figure out how the thermals would work up there, what the best plan of action was, where to glass, where to make my stock, what to, you know, I just didn't know. Looking back, you know, now if I was in those scenarios, oh my gosh, I mean, both those years I had two great bucks that for 3 days in a row would did the same thing. And had I would have known now, you know, then, oh my gosh, I mean, 50, 60 yard probably opportunities, you know, just wheelhouse deals. But I didn't know any better. And I took some pretty hard knocks to the chin, probably lost a few teeth in the process. But I quickly learned I need to work on navigating rocks. I need to work on the topography up there, how to read it, what I can actually go across, what I can't, how the thermals work, you know, and I started to really work on that. Well, year four, when I finally punch that coveted Colorado tag, I burn a bunch of points, get in this great unit, I'm 10 miles in, and lo and behold, guess where this buck is? He's up in the rocks and he's up in the cliffs. But I had confidence and I knew what had worked or what had not worked and what I needed to do. And I, you know, I had done this for 3 years prior. At that point, I kind of knew or had a good idea of what my plan was, what I needed to do. And that ended up resulting in a good opportunity. And I made the best of it and thankfully made a good shot and got him killed. But like you said, you hit the nail on the head. The mountain and mule deer do not care what bow, what camo, what binos, how much you worked, how much you weigh, how much you can bench press, how many miles you ran. They just, none of that matters. They don't care if your Instagram handle is cool like Henry's or if it's generic like mine. They don't care. None of that matters up there. And, you know, it all comes down to the choices you make of whether it's going to be make or break. So, you know, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Henry, because it is. It's a, if you're going to hunt mule deer and elk out west, you better get used to not punching tags, because that is going to happen a lot, especially in the growing pains of sort of figuring it all out. You know, I don't know anybody that's just jumped into Western big game hunting and consistently just starts punching tags, and that's just how it's been from day one. I mean, maybe you know someone that's lucky, like I don't. I don't know anyone that's just dove into it and, man, this is easy. I'm punching tags every day. This is easy. What are you guys doing?
If I did, I would immediately unfriend that person.
Oh, for sure. Block
that
person.
Because we would have nothing in common.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm there with you. And, you know, it's funny to hear you talk about that, you know, because you have had a lot of success and you constantly find success, but you're putting in the time and the effort and the work that goes into this. And that's what usually it boils down to is, you know, everything that leads up to that final stock and shot and whatnot. And, you know, I don't know many guys that put in more time and effort and energy than you do. Different method to your madness than a lot of guys, but nonetheless, still a high amount of effort and time behind glass and energy. Now, here's something I want to, before we're running close to an hour, so we will have to unfortunately wrap her up here sooner than later. But Henry, what's your philosophy on, okay, you're in a unit you've never been in, you're going to e-scout, we're talking velvet early season, first 2 or 3 weeks of season, mule deer, what are you looking for, especially now with your method, how you like to hunt? Because what I'm going to look for would be totally different than what you're going to look at or look for. So if you're going to e-scout, you drew a unit, you've never been there, you're coming from Michigan. You're coming out to Colorado. You drew this tag, never stepped foot. You're not going to have time to scout. You're going to walk right into the hunt. What's your method behind e-scouting? What's kind of your 1-2-3 on e-scouting? How are you breaking a unit down? This could be a whole other separate podcast that we should do, but just give me some basic key highlighted points of your philosophy to breaking down a unit that you've never been in and you're only going to pretty much get to e-scout it. What are you looking for with your method to mule deer? What's kind of the highlights?
Well, first of all, you've got the wrong guy. I'm not a good e-scouter, and I prove that every time I go to a new unit. My preferred method of hunting is glassing. So right. I want to make sure I find terrain that's conducive to that.
Yep.
So whether that's looking on Google Earth for wide open spots, whether it's up in the high country
yep.
or in the sage. And then if I'm looking in the sage, let's say I'm looking in the sage, I want to find pockets of brush because I know that those deer, especially in that early season, it's friggin' hot out here.
Oh, yeah, okay? Absolutely.
It just is. And they will need shade at some point in the day.
Yep.
So I want to find pockets of aspens. I want to find pockets of buck brush that – and these – when I say pockets, I found them in pockets that you could fit in a bathtub. And I found them in pockets that are the size of a city block.
Yep.
So don't overlook something because you're like, well, that's not enough. Chances are it is.
Yeah.
And I have watched deer find those little pockets, bed up in those in the late morning, you know, in the yep. early morning, and then shift their beds around that thing throughout the whole day.
Yep.
Literally just right around that little pocket. And it's something that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for terrain that is open enough that I can sit down and use my glass. I'm not looking for pine-covered hillsides,
right.
man. I know they hold big deer.
Yep.
And honestly, I'm starting to lose sleep over all the big deer that I'm missing out on in those pine-covered hillsides because I did kill a couple. My first couple bucks I killed with a bow were basically just like that. I just kind of hunted areas where I saw a lot of tracks during the summer, or I knew there was feed and water there, and I just yep. kind of keyed in on that, hiked around, and I hiked until I got lucky. And I realized after I shot my second buck that I was doing just that. That
right.
instead of having a 3-year gap between good bucks, that if I improved my methods and improved my technique, I could perhaps get a deer every year. And I mean, that just, as I started thinking about it, I got really excited. And so I started looking at changing my methodology.
Yep.
And that's what I started looking for, is that open terrain. So I'm looking for that open terrain. I'm looking for feed. I'm looking for water. And if you can find those things, you're probably going to find deer.
Yep.
Eventually you're going to find deer.
Yep.
So, and I did e-scout couple years ago on my son's first deer tag. And when I say I e-scouted it, I got a landowner tag the night before the season opened.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and I knew it was a fourth season tag, which the season opens on like a Wednesday. Well, my son was in sixth grade. You know, my wife's like, oh, you're not taking him out of school. And so we negotiated and ended up, I took him out on Friday. So we left home way early Friday morning and had reservations for a hotel up in the area because I didn't know where we were going to be. It was cold. It was late season. My butt wasn't camping out. And as it turns out, we weren't staying in the hotel either because I had made the reservation for the wrong weekend. That's another story for another time, but don't worry about that.
minor details that no one needs to know.
Minor details. And if that was the only time that had happened in my life, that'd be fine. But it's been a bit of a pattern for me lately. So, and this is coming from a guy who I travel a lot for work, so I'm constantly making hotel reservations and painting myself into corners here sometimes. But anyway, we e-scouted it, and I figured out, hey, you know what? It's late in the year. These bucks are going to be down low. I'm going to be looking for them in Aspen and Sage kind of country.
Yep.
And we had a couple spots highlighted, and as it turns out, second spot we went to, the first spot, it was just filled with antelope. Second spot, I found some does. I kind of glassed around a little bit more in that second spot, found a couple more does, and looked back at that first group of does, and all of a sudden a buck was there. So, but I mean, you know, it's not always that easy, but I did kind of have an idea of what I was looking for too. So I knew that time of year, you know, finding does late season is key, because, you know, that's just like finding does out there in whitetails. That's all the bucks you're thinking about right then anyway. So.
No, absolutely.
But yeah, we got lucky. We shot that buck and didn't have to worry. I went in there to cancel my hotel reservation after we shot the buck and made it back into the nearest town. And she goes, "Sir, you're not supposed to be here till next Friday night." Like, whoops.
Well, that worked out good.
Glad we got a dead deer, because we were going to have a long drive to another hotel that night if I didn't.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, see, it was all meant to be. It worked out that way.
Yeah, it could have been a whole lot worse, that's for sure.
That's right. So. That's true. Well, Henry, man, you know, there's a wealth of knowledge in this from you, and this is exactly why I wanted to have you on. Basically, you know, I don't know anyone that kills more. I mean, we just went through 20 or 25 antelope that you've killed with your bow. I don't really know anybody that kills more antelope bucks with you. Wrong guy.
I've killed three antelope with my bow. Three. Each of them a little bit more fortunate and luckier than the last.
There you go.
And I don't want to give people the wrong impression.
I'm messing with you, but no, this has been great, Henry, because, you know, like I said, I've said this a couple of times, but I can't stress it. You know, there's not only one way to hunt mule deer, and you don't have to be the backcountry, I'm going in 10 mile deep guy. You know, you don't have to be the, I got six pack and I could run a marathon guy. There is more than one way to skin a cat. And your method and your kind of muley madness that you've created for yourself has all been based off of how you like to hunt, what you like to do, what your strengths and weaknesses are. And, you know, hey, you said it best. You like to eat pizza and a cheeseburger with a Pepsi. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
You know what? That guy right there, that guy can still go find and kill and have a hell of a good time doing it mule deer every single year, and you're proof in that. Now, still got to put in work, still got to put in effort. It's just a different type and a different style, and you're proof in the pudding. You know, I look at your Instagram page often, and, you know, the amount of big mature bucks you've been able to arrow and the amount of critters that you're able to kill every year, you know, with the same kind of method, because I know you hunt some elk, you hunt antelope. You know, you're kind of mixing it up a little bit, and I'm assuming probably a lot of this stuff that you hunt, it's going to be sort of the same philosophy. You know, you're this technique.
Totally.
Yeah, this technique that you've kind of, I guess, perfected for yourself, it's not just a mule deer thing. It's not just an animal. You know, I mean, you can use this on basically any Western big game animal you want to go after. You know, it's maybe sheep and goats might be a little more difficult, but hey, who's really hunting them anyway?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know what? It's such a small window of opportunity, because if you're lucky, you'll get to hunt them once in your life.
Oh, I know.
You're lucky.
I keep waiting on that, man. That's two of my top of a bighorn or a stone and a mountain goat with my bow. That's my top two. I just want to be the guy that says, "Yep, I did it. I killed one of each, or both would be great, with my bow." But that's a tall order just to get the tag. Then the hunt comes and starts, you know. But anyways, yeah, I can't thank you enough, Henry, for coming on, because, like I said, you know, you bring a different flavor, my man, and you're very effective in glassing and the strategies behind it. You know, there's a lot to be said from a guy like you that has held true to your pattern and what you like to do and not fall in trap. I think sometimes we fall trap to what's sexy on Instagram. And you know what?
Yep.
Henry says, nope, I'm going to stay sexy with my Pepsi and my burger and pizza, and you guys go ahead and have fun. Clint, you have fun back there in the backcountry 12 miles in with Brian Barney, and I'm going to be right over here about 3 miles in on my vantage point with my Pepsi, and we'll see you later. I like it, man. I like it.
Hey, whatever floats your boat and brings you joy at the end of the day, man, that's what hunting's supposed to be about anyway. So
absolutely.
That's how I approach it.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we covered Instagram, Big Chief Wackabuck. Where else can people find you or anything that you got going on? I mean, I know you've been on a couple different podcasts and different things. Where can people kind of find you, or is Instagram the best place? Give us a place where people want to follow along.
Yeah. Probably the best bet is Instagram. So yep. At Big Chief Wackabuck, or my other page, which is called Not Fit to Hunt.
And I forgot about that. That's, yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, we started out that page, my buddy and I, and we wanted to do, you know, we wanted to help people shorten the learning curve for archery, because right. I got him started in bow hunting. He goes, you know, one day we were talking, he goes, man, you helped me shorten this learning curve so
yep.
much.
Yep.
And it's because I've already made all the mistakes that
right.
he was about to make.
Right.
So I kind of guided him and helped him, you know, avoid a lot of those shortfalls and pitfalls. And so we kind of started talking. We decided we'd do a YouTube channel and do a, you know, an Instagram page and just do the whole thing and teach people how to kind of, you know, shorten that learning curve. Well, about a year in, we realized that that's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you know, we both have families, both have jobs, both have hobbies, and we blew it off. And now it's basically just a meme page. So, but, yeah, and honestly, both of my pages, it's going to be a lot of pictures of me and my family and, you know, doing outdoor stuff. I mean, that's a big part of our life.
Love to see it. Love
it's
to
what
see
we
it.
Do. So, yeah, and it's we do it. We have fun, and if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. That's how I've always phrased it.
You
which
got,
is why I question why I go antelope hunting so often. So
there you go. Well, yeah. I'll tell you what. I'm going to make sure I tag and hashtag Pepsi when this episode drops, because I'm really, I'm going to push for you as best I can. I really think you deserve it. You know, you've put in the time, you've put in the effort.
Exactly.
I mean,
gosh.
And here's the deal. I mean, your Instagram handle, I mean, it's sexy enough that you would think Pepsi would, why would they not want to be teamed up with the Big Chief
Wackabuck?
I don't understand. I mean, they'll sponsor a halftime show at the Super Bowl, but they won't throw you a couple cases a year to sponsor you on Instagram. We're going to work on it. We really are. We're going to tag them. We're going to see what we can do, because I feel like you've earned it, Henry. I really do. I feel like you deserve that one.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd be a cheap date too compared to the
see?
Halftime show.
There it
so,
is.
Yeah. So, like you said, you know, just kick me off a couple of 24 packs a month and I'm good.
There it
I'm
is.
Good. That's all I need.
Hey,
so
Henry, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I'm going to do what I can to try
my
to help you with the Pepsi sponsorship. I'm going to see what I can do and we'll go from there. Maybe some of our listeners that share this, maybe they'll jump on the bandwagon. Hashtag, give them the hashtag Pepsi, man. I mean, hey, Big Chief Wackabuck, he deserves it. You know, you deserve it, my man. You've been repping Pepsi a long
Telling
time.
You. Yeah. Well, it's a generational thing. You know, I got it from my dad. So,
well, hey, Henry, good luck this fall. You've got a mule deer tag now, so
I'm going to be
waiting on the text to come through that says photo image from Big Chief Wackabuck. That's how you're in my phone. I'm gonna be waiting on it, my man. I'm gonna be waiting on it.
Well, hopefully, I don't keep you waiting too long, but we shall see. There's never a guarantee out there, man.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, my man, hey, good luck this year. Tell the other two pieces to your puzzle I said the same, and I'll be anxiously awaiting pictures.
Sounds good, man. Take care, Clint. Good luck out there.
Hey, appreciate it. You too, Henry.
Can you say the letter C? CNC Hunt Files.